It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff Jarvis is here. Stacey Higginbotham. Lots to talk about. Everything from Elizabeth Warren's plan to break Google up to Foursquare knowing everywhere you are and selling it to anybody who wants it. And, of course, the reaction to Mark Zuckerberg's plan to take Facebook private. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 499, recorded Wednesday, March 13th, 2019. Monopolopsony. This Week in Google is brought to you by Envoy. Envoy builds beautiful, modern software to help businesses elevate the physical workplace experience. With Envoy Visitors, you can greet guests with a welcoming, sleek iPad sign-in app while still protecting your people, property, and ideas. Start your free trial today at envoy.com/twit. And by DigitalOcean, the simplest cloud platform for developers and teams. Deploy, manage, and scale cloud applications faster and more efficiently with DigitalOcean. Sign up today and receive a free $100 credit at do.co/twit. And by WordPress. Turn your dreams into reality and launch your website at wordpress.com. Get 15% off any new plan at wordpress.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest news from the Googleverse with Mr. Jeffrey Jarvis, professor of journalism at the City University of New York, blogger at BuzzMachine.com, and author of many fine tomes, including What Would Google Do? Public Parts and Geeks Bearing Gifts. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, hello, hello.
We are glad. Singapore's loss is our gain, Jeff stated.
I was an 18-and-a-half-hour flight I decided not to take.
I don't blame you. Wow. Also with us, Stacey Higginbotham, back in her home in beautiful Austin, Texas. All the geeks have left. South By is over.
Oh, South By is still happening. It's just not the geeks.
Now the more drunken geeks.
Is it music or film?
It's music and film.
Oh. So they used to have separate for interactive music and film. Now they've combined music and film to one thing?
Film kind of stretches across most of the week.
Oh, okay. Okay. We really wanted to go this year, and we couldn't. But next year, I think we're at least. I said we should really go. Huh. It's good.
I won't be here.
I have more of my peeps were there this year than have been in recent years. It appeared because generally it's marketers and Germans.
Yeah. Of course,
you're not wrong, Jeff.
Right. The Germans, for some reason, the Germans thought this is where all the cool kids go, and they love it. They have German houses, German parties.
You're kidding?
Every
really?
German I know goes.
Really?
There is actually a really big. I would say European in general, but the Germans are a big chunk of it. But I was just there yesterday and there was, you know, two fellows speaking French behind me. And then I ran into a friend of mine who lives in Finland. So, yeah, you know, it's sunny here. It's cold and wet and miserable up there.
So I'm gonna put it in the chat now. Lufthansa runs a special flight.
Wow. The South by South by Express.
The Lufthansa Flying Lab.
Oh my God. Just put it in the chat.
And they program it with speakers and other things while you're flying.
Oh, that would be kind of fun. I would do that.
It's a very good idea. A friend of mine started this. He's left Lufthansa since, but it's really very cool.
Yeah. So you get a little conference on the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Look at the speakers. Jürgen Leorand, Lars Benedikt Dyson, Katie Cook.
So what do? They stand up in the aisle? And they talk on the microphone.
Yeah, they do. And so everybody watches through their devices through the Wi-Fi.
I want to see Chagall. Oh, this is really interesting.
Right? So, and live music performance.
So don't go on this flight if you want a quiet flight all by yourself. You got a rap artist from Berlin. Wow. And then the German house. You weren't kidding.
There's a French house. There's a Chinese house. There's all the houses. There's a DC house. There's a Michigan house.
I hired a brilliant executive from German media just to launch our new program in news innovation leadership at the Newmark School. And she was on Facebook and said, oh, I'm not in South by Southwest. I said, that's because you're a New Yorker now. Only Germans go. You're not a New York German anymore. You're a New Yorker.
Actually, Foursquare was back after 10 years. Foursquare was discovered at South by Southwest 10 years ago. That was its big breakout moment. And Paris Martineau was on the Twit on Sunday talking about her article. She got a little peek at what Foursquare is up to these days, and it might be just a little bit disquieting. Turns out Foursquare is not gone. Far from it. They apparently are one of the big data brokers for location information. And
it's a pivot that worked.
It was a big pivot. Now, the thing is, I remember when they launched Swarm and they said Foursquare is going to be the place like a guide, but Swarm's what you use to check in. And I kept doing it for a while, but I stopped. Turns out you don't need to play Foursquare or check in on Swarm for Foursquare to know exactly where you are. They're collecting information from a lot of apps on a lot of phones. They have, during South by, I don't know if you saw this, Stacey, they released a demo of this called Hyper Trending that had, that had bubbles where the most people were.
I think this is really interesting. And all like the writer of the piece is right. This is both creepy for many people and cool for other people.
Actually, it was Dennis Crowley who said, we're not sure. We said, we're not sure if it's creepy or cool.
I like that they threw it out at a tech event. I actually would draw the parallel with this and the NBC story that you have on scraping people's photos for facial recognition.
Oh,
I think
yeah,
there's a very clear parallel here about people. This actually makes clear what data is being collected in a way that is pretty visceral for people. And it does it in a way that still respects their anonymity, which I think is the best possible way to do something like this.
But it misstates it because you are not, in fact, anonymous in the actual data that Foursquare sells people. You are identified by a unique advertising ID, which I think wouldn't be too hard to de-anonymize you. So, yeah, and Crowley, who's the founder of Foursquare, said, we're not sure if it's a responsible thing or not to have a view like this in the phone yet. I don't know how people will react to seeing a heat map in real time of where all the phones are. I can imagine some people would say, oh, that's the coolest thing. And some people would be like, that's the creepiest thing.
Well,
and so they wanted to put it out there. But I think they don't. What they're doing is misrepresenting it a little bit because, yeah, these are just anonymous blobs. These show numbers. But in fact, the data that they're selling is much more specific.
It shows also, well, in the not this version, but in the game they were talking about, also showing replacing that unique ID with an avatar and a fake photo and then showing the demographic data. I think, so I get what you're saying. This sort of tracking is happening and people kind of assume it's happening, but they don't know what that really means. I think this gives them a nice window to start understanding what that means. And I think anyone who freaks out about this, that's totally fine. Then they're going to say, wait, how does Foursquare know this? And then they're going to suddenly realize when they look into it that Foursquare has companies like Uber and I don't know if Google does, Uber, Twitter, they're all using Foursquare's code to get your geolocation information.
And then to feed more information back in, I presume.
Yeah, and then they'll actually be like, wait a second, can I get out of this? And I think that'll start a really important conversation. Also, like,
so we're going to switch. Go ahead.
I wish it would, but I don't think that this hyper trending thing does that because it's understating what they're actually doing. In 2014, Foursquare launched Pilgrim, which you cannot see, a piece of code that passively tracks where your phone goes using Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, GPS, GSM. It identifies the shop or the park or the restaurant you're visiting, feeds data to its partner apps, of which there are more than 1,000, and that's, you know, location apps like Twitter and Uber. Pilgrim and the company's Places API are an integral part of tens of thousands of apps, sites, and interfaces. As Foursquare's website says, if it tells you where, it's probably built on Foursquare. But what Paris points out is, yeah, it's anonymized, sort of, but there is a unique ID, and there would be all sorts of nefarious ways to use this. She says, you know, what if you notice the same guy in a few different locations and you had this data? It wouldn't be hard at all to put a face with a number and say, now I know where he is. And as long as I can get this data, I can see where he is at all times.
But consumers don't have that data. And And they're clustering people in this particular app.
But that's the point. This app doesn't show what they're actually doing. This is a bowdlerized app. They took the good stuff out, the stuff that, yes, you and I don't have access to, but plenty of other companies do. They have an API that is much more granular than this.
I still think it's a good point and a good place to start the conversation.
Well, I'm glad they did this much, but they need to do a lot more.
So here's my question.
Also good they showed Paris Martineau what they're really doing, because that's much more dramatic. They know they have an ID for you, Stacey.
I know they have an ID. I mean, everybody has an ID for
me. Well, Verizon got in a lot of trouble for having an ID for its users. They got fined.
Oh, the cookies, the super cookies?
IDs, I'm sure it's not just Foursquare. Google's got to be doing this. Apple's probably doing it. Other companies are doing it as well.
Are you familiar with Euclid?
What's Euclid?
It's a company that tracks Wi-Fi. They keep a unique ID for everybody's handset based on their Wi-Fi.
There you go.
Trying to join Wi-Fi networks.
Yeah.
So yes, but this is happening everywhere. It's not just Foursquare. It's not just like Foursquare's doing location. You are, I would also say, I don't know if you're getting a super valuable service. Like, I don't care that Twitter knows my location, but that Uber knows my location is really important to me. It's the bedrock of the service.
Although I could point out that Uber could get your location by asking your phone in the Uber app where you are. Uber knows where you are, but apparently is collecting more information than you're volunteering.
Well, that is true. That could be true. I don't know the terms that Foursquare has with Uber, but one of the challenges with GPS in certain areas is that it doesn't work well. So having an overlay like Foursquare is probably helpful.
Maybe that's all they're using it for. Okay.
Question?
I don't know, though.
So we'll switch roles here. Stacey's all in favor. I'm worried about Iran and Turkey.
Yeah.
And
Russia. No, my point precisely. A malicious actor. Let's say Putin says, you know, we got to take Stacey Higginbotham out. She's really.
Well, no, forget the individual. Forget the individual.
But it could
be
an individual.
We're seeing a cluster of demonstrators heading to a place.
There you go. They're starting to mount up in Tahrir Square.
That's what I'm saying.
They have cameras, though.
They have the means to track those people already.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but you could see groups starting to coalesce. You could see other things.
Yeah, you're right.
With this data.
You can. You could see people's phones. Now, that's why a lot of demonstrators try to hop off networks and use like peer-to-peer networks. I mean.
That's right.
I think there's probably going to be, if there isn't already, we're going to continuously see a development of protocols for people who are protesting. And I think it's good. And I think some of the things are, hey, how do you use a decentralized peer-to-peer app on your phone to talk to people? How, like, at home, you're going to regularly go through Tor. I think we're also going to see things like people tweaking their makeup and their hats and everything else to avoid facial recognition. And I think those are actually some of the more interesting things to watch, because it helps us lay. It's the other side that most people don't see, that lay bare the surveillance kind of state and surveillance capitalism that we have. So I don't know. I don't think this is like the worst thing. I think it's actually a decent conversation starter. And I like the fact that it self-destructs after 2 weeks. Wait, hold on. No, well, what if they delete? Well, they're not going to delete all that data. Foursquare has the same sort of subpoena things that Google and Facebook have. They fight that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you can't argue against this if you're going to be like, yeah, I love Facebook and all that it's done, or I'm okay with Google having access to all of this data, which they do and more, and they also have unique advertisement. Like,
yeah, my concern is not the individual level, because your phone company knows it already.
Right.
Apps know it already. This is not new in that sense. The question is that notion of another view of coalescing and using our freedom of assembly. So it's in the aggregate that it bothers me more than the individual.
I would
flip it on its head and I would say, how cool would it be to use something like this and check out how many people are at the DMV when you want to go?
Yeah.
How cool would it be?
I love it. Google Maps does that already. It'll show you when you want to go somewhere where the busy times are.
It's incredibly valuable to stores.
And it's valuable for people counting or understanding, you know, I think people counting is actually a really under under-discussed and under-thought about way that we could actually use phones to help people like just make their day better. And I'm thinking of things like, hey, if I have to go to the ER, can I see which ERs have the most people? Could we build a service based on something like this? We're not now because there's no profit in it. But those kind of services are highly valuable, and you could do that with this. I don't know.
We are all carrying tracking devices, and I agree with you. It's a good idea for Foursquare and others to start the conversation so that we understand. We're not taken off guard by this. I think part of the problem is it's hard for humans to put two and two together sometimes. And while we're all kind of aware of the fact that our phone knows where we are and our apps know where we are, we don't think about other consequences of it. You said face recognition. This actually doesn't use face recognition. This is
based— Oh, no. The parallel is to the NBC story on people.
We'll get to that. So, but I just want to say that the point is if you combine this with face recognition, you're suddenly de-anonymized.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, honey, you're de-anonymized anyway. I mean,
everybody knows Leo.
Everybody knows anybody they want to know. And if you combine all this data, I mean, I think, you know,
yes.
When I think about the Bourne movies, right? And you watch them track Jason Bourne all over the place with what it seemed at the time, very advanced stuff like cameras everywhere and stuff. That's now chicken feed compared to the kind. They wouldn't have any trouble following Jason Bourne at all nowadays.
Right. You would have to 3D print your own like new face mask. You would have to. I'm not kidding. You would have to do something crazy like that. You wouldn't have to. You'd have to not have a phone.
Well, Mr. Robot.
Use apps.
I think it's funny that you're arguing in its favor and Jeff's arguing against it. It's just completely blowing my mind.
We just conspired before the show, Leo.
Did you?
To do this to you.
Let's talk about this Flickr thing. So Yahoo, way back when, I remember when they did this, made a research database available, which had a lot of information in it, information that was quickly de-anonymized by people in a variety of ways. What I didn't know is that among other things in this database, they put Flickr pictures. And now it's coming out that and this is an NBC news story, again, good on them for this scoop, that those Flickr pictures are being used by IBM to train face recognition. In fact, we could even say IBM is on the side of the angels here because one of the things they're doing is trying to make face recognition more racially fair.
Less racist.
Less racist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I think the problem is that a lot of people didn't know that this was going on. And the story is that IBM did not inform people when it used their photos for face recognition training. Now, the good news is NBC, even though IBM would not give them the data set, NBC was able to get it in other ways. And there is a tool on the NBC site, Did IBM Use Your Photos? And you can enter in, and I haven't done this yet, your Flickr handle, and just to see if your photos, the photos I think were always Creative Commons, right? So they weren't licensed photos. And they were de-anonymized.
Were they de-anonymized? Or were they were annotated with features.
But
so that's different than being de-anonymized.
Like they might have had racial information.
It's your dog who scared you.
That's a good question. I know that the main Yahoo database was, and they made a big point about this, completely de-anonymized. No, none of my photos are in the IBM data set. What's your Flickr handle? Anybody want to volunteer?
Oh, I can't remember because it was that Fakakta Yahoo thing.
Yeah, because
I had
Flickr
to use a Yahoo
different.
Account. And it was the same as a Yahoo
it
handle.
Was
that was the whole
I
mess.
Oh, was it? Okay. Well, let me see if Leo Laporte's in there because I was.
Yahoo ruined everything it touched.
Let me see if Chris Marquardt, I know his Flickr handle. Let's see if his. Oh, yeah. Chris Marquardt's photos are in there. Here is one of them. So here's the most important point. I was able to find it because Chris Marquardt submitted these photos to Flickr, but whoever this guy is, this friend of Chris's, is the face. Not Chris's, but the friend. It's a picture by Chris. And this guy definitely didn't know that when Chris took his picture, it was going to be included in an IBM training set.
So here's the thing.
And now on the Twig podcast, I might add, and I apologize for de-anonymizing you.
Well, you haven't de-anonymized him. You've shown a random face on the internet. We don't know who that is yet. Could we find out more easily
pretty
now that
quick.
We've seen it? Yes.
Yeah.
But one, when you scrape faces for facial recognition purposes, what you're pulling is you're pulling that image. You're going to annotate it. So basically that means you're going to say, this is a man. This is a bald man. This is a bald white man with a camera.
Right.
You're going to put all of that in there. And then you send that to the computer, and the computer like looks at it and categorizes it, does its stuff. And then you get that picture doesn't ever come up again. So again, annotating and de-anonymizing, very different. And I would say that when you sent your pictures in under Creative Commons, if you chose that licensing scheme, you did it knowing that your photo could end up on Wikipedia,
for example. But that's the point, is that Chris Marquardt did it and made it Creative Commons. But it's not a picture of him,
picture
it's somebody else.
But again,
the guy whose picture it is had no consent in it and may not even know. However, I don't have any problem with it. I want to point out but it's interesting, isn't it? I might be one of those pictures too, because Chris is taking
a lot
of pictures.
No one else is going to. So the researchers who are annotating it see those pictures.
But that's all, right?
But that's it. Those aren't.
And we need data for research.
We need it. And
we need knowledge.
We want to, especially to make sure our algorithms are not sexist and racist.
Yep.
So what happens with these, IBM took a collection of 100 million images, all Creative Commons licensed. Yahoo had released as a batch for researchers in 2014. They narrowed it down to 1 million faces, each annotated with almost 200 values, things like...
Oh, and some of it was automated, not even human.
Right, measuring the interpupillary distance, the pose, the skin tone, estimated age and gender. And then used to train the data set. I think, in fact, this is a good thing. I'm sure everybody knows that when you allow Google to upload all your photos to Google Photos, that they're using that for training. Otherwise, that search wouldn't work.
Exactly.
I would say, so here's a thing to think about. A picture that is taken in what is clearly a public area might be different than like those naked selfies that you took or pictures of your lover in the bedroom. I don't know if those are filtered out.
Stacy.
What?
But even then, nobody sees it.
But even then, no one sees them. Well, no, the human researcher.
Some researcher might see it. And I bet he's saving the good stuff.
Well, that is so. And I mean.
No, but you put it on Flickr for crying out loud. In public.
Yeah, this is why I don't. And every time I have to sign a waiver for like my daughter's school that she could be photographed and things, I say no.
Yeah. And so that's the thing to keep in mind is that in cases like this, the subject of the photograph is not really in any way involved. So if you're letting people take your picture, you should consider what might end up happening.
I tell, like, when people take my picture, I ask them not to tag me. If people take a picture and my daughter's in it, I make sure they don't tag her. So, and you'll never catch me posting pictures of my daughter on anything.
Yeah,
so
that's really, I think now this explains why this is a good idea. On the other hand, it's also a good idea to give as broad a data set as possible to these face recognition programs, because if they only get white men, they ain't going to be very good. And what that means potentially is a police department that uses these for finding criminals is going to be much more likely to have false positives with, let's say, women and people of dark skin.
Let's talk about the use case of facial.
That's a bad outcome. Mm-hmm. So this is to reverse that. I'm for it. I'm going to give him a pass.
Pass.
Okay.
Leo gives it a pass.
I don't give Foursquare a pass, but I give this one a pass. How about Mark Zuckerberg a week later? That came out. That took me by surprise during the show last week. I hadn't read it. I thought we had a great conversation about it.
It was a really interesting conversation, yeah.
And at the time, I reactivated my Facebook account, my Messenger account, because I believed he was sincere. And I have been since talked out of that and have deleted it again.
Oh, jeez. Ay, ay, ay.
Well, I mean, I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he'll change things. But after reading, for instance, Ben Thompson's excellent commentary, Mike Mazda, Tech Dirt, Ben Thompson and Stratechery, Walt Mossberg says he's skeptical. Casey Newton says this is huge pivot. We were kind of ourselves like, wow, this is amazing. If he does it.
No. I was skeptical. I want you to know.
Well, and there's no reason to know yet, but I think I've been convinced by everybody that what Mark said, I misinterpreted. He's not going to change Facebook. He's going to add a privacy specific messaging.
Messenger.
Yes, service. But he
and
also
he's
going to
break down the
changing
walls between Facebook and those other services.
Right.
Well, he also says that he's changing the focus of the company. Is he going to kill Facebook tomorrow? Of course not.
No. Yeah. No. Or
no,
ever.
I would say that.
Or ever.
But he's basically saying that the focus of the company shifts to encrypted encryption and messaging.
I think what Thompson said is he's having his privacy cake and eating it too. And what Ben says, and I think this is actually accurate, is that Mark saw a real opportunity, as we pointed out last week on WeChat Line, to be the WeChat of the West. And That's really what he's saying is, I have a brand new business opportunity and we're going to go after it full throttle.
And Ben says at the end of the thing, it is not incompatible. A company's own desires is not necessarily incompatible with users' interests.
That's
right. And to presume that is gets us in trouble. So it could be that this is a, what do we call it now? A win-win. I don't say things like that. I don't say things like that.
He actually says, here's the three broad takeaways. Stop expecting companies to act against their interests. Facebook is not killing their core business any more than Apple is willing to go to the mat to protect user data in China. Facebook is doing something that benefits itself. Facebook doing something that benefits itself is not inherently bad for end users.
Right, that's the point I was making. Yep. Yes.
It's perfectly reasonable the company can be instituting genuinely user-friendly changes like end-to-end encryption, even as it furthers its own self-interests. Relatedly, and most importantly, there needs to be much more appreciation for the anti-competitive trade-offs inherent in an absolutist approach to privacy. Facebook is doing what its fiercest critics supposedly want, but it's also enhancing its competitive position as a result.
The law of unintended consequences, folks. Yeah. Be careful what you wish for.
I'll tell you what. I will use that completely private end-to-end Facebook, but I'm going to wait until that comes out before I reinstitute my Facebook account, because it's not that way now.
And I would wait.
It's going to take a lot of time.
And I would do this because – am I on mute?
Nope. No.
Oh, okay. I was like, what's happening?
We're just ignoring him. That's all.
I would wait. And this is because he talked about lowering interoperability between services, which he currently says is an important aspect, is that users will be able to opt in to sharing their WeChat with their Facebook, whatever. I think given Facebook's history, he'll say that today. And then in a year or so, we will suddenly find all of that glommed together, which, to use my example, I do have pictures of my daughter on WeChat. And I would be really bummed out if that.
They're on WeChat? Facebook. Why are they on WeChat?
Not WeChat. I'm sorry. WhatsApp. My
brain. You have friends in China?
I do actually have friends in China.
Well,
but
then you might put them on WeChat. WeChat is totally dominant in China.
Okay,
as we
replace WeChat
out.
With WhatsApp.
Yeah. WhatsApp could be the WeChat of the West.
All the time.
It could be the WeChat of the West. It could be. This is a big opportunity. It's already dominant in a lot of, not in the U.S., but in Brazil and a lot of countries. WhatsApp, India is how people communicate. And in fact, we should point out, WhatsApp has had some of the same problems Facebook's having. It's being accused in India of creating mass mob violence, being used to incite violence, distribute fake news. It still has some of the same problems.
So. So going to a fully encrypted world, if you're trying to enforce the law or deal with misinformation is not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah.
Right. Mark actually said in his Wired interview, quote, in terms of safety, security, and safety and spam, the work there will be harder if we only rely on detecting patterns of activity rather than being able to have the security system see the context content of the messages themselves. Of course, I would argue that's true. But as a parent, for example, yeah, my life would be super easy if I kept a surveillance camera on my daughter at all times, but that's not going to help right. her develop and right. allow her to become her own person. So, you know, sorry.
So, Mark, and in fact, it was the Wired interview, and kudos to Nicholas Thompson at Wired, who very quickly got an interview with Mark. It was this interview that actually convinced me that I misunderstood Mark's manifesto, and it was this paragraph. The thinking is there need to be two types of platforms in the world. One is a more public platform, like the digital equivalent of a town square where you interact with a lot of people at once. That's largely what Facebook and Instagram are. The other platform is the private space, the digital equivalent to the living room and the foundation that we have
Leo,
for WhatsApp and Messenger.
Why would you want the public to go away? Let them both exist. And those who wish to be public,
right,
like me and like you used to, can have that and can gather and can do things. And that's fine.
You know, I don't mind being public.
Otherwise, the world turns into a turtle shell.
In all honesty, it's not me minding being public. I mind the public talking back. I don't want to hear from them. So it's, you know what I'm saying? I don't mind them knowing everything about me. I just don't want to hear their thoughts about it.
First time caller. Hello. 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 Is there anybody listening? Hello.
No, I have to be public. That's my job. But it seems like everybody has a thought about it. That kind of wears you down after a while.
That's an entirely different thing, Leo.
That's another problem.
Like, I'm not going to go there.
Blame geeks.
Okay, so I'm a flawed human. What can I say? But I'd be very interested if he does take WhatsApp and or Messenger and make it fully private. But when he does, that's when I'll sign up, not until then. How about that? Let's take a break because I want to now get to Elizabeth Warren. Well, we know. Well, actually, that was the whole segment right there.
Which
we can stop now and then move on. Stacey goes, Jeff goes, ugh. But you know what? She's probably already, I bet you there's some interest in other quarters of the other Democratic candidates. On what she says and how they can slice that. They're watching, aren't they? They're watching. Did that work? Kudos to Warren for being the first to say it. But we'll
cynical
talk.
Political opportunism.
You think it was cynical?
But go ahead.
You think it was cynical?
Oh yeah.
Oh good. We're gonna have a nice conversation coming up. First, I want to show you this. I know you think it's an iPad. And it is, actually. It is an iPad. But it's more than that. This is what you will see. The first thing you'll see when you come to Twit. And a lot of businesses in the world, this is our envoy. It's time to welcome your guests to the modern lobby and be ready for everything that comes in your front door. Envoy Visitors, and I'll launch it right now, is an iPad kiosk that makes workplaces more efficient. We've always, when we've had people come to watch our shows, we've always had them sign a waiver and give them an informational thing and all that. Now we can do it on the Envoy through this really great interface on an iPad. When visitors arrive, they sign in on the iPad kiosk. They enter their details. If, you know, we just need their name, sign any legal documents. In our case, NDA, not an NDA, but a waiver so that they won't sue us for tripping over wires and stuff. And they do that right on the iPad. The Envoy then notifies us. It automatically, if in an enterprise where you've got people visiting employees, it'll automatically notify the employee their guest is here. So you don't, the front desk is, Moses loves this. It's so much easier for him. So, you know, their employee knows who's coming and you don't get surprised by somebody. I don't know him. What is he doing here? What is he selling me? This is just awesome. I just love it. It is really streamlined. Our process, and the thing is, our visitors love it too. It's a much easier way of doing the things we need before somebody comes into our studios. You'll boost your office efficiency with smart security that doesn't intimidate. It's very friendly. There's no more paper logbook. And really, what good is that? You know, I'd like to go through your logbook from last year. No, it's all in a database. You could sign in unlimited visitors, even print customized badges. We don't do that, but you could hook up the printer and have it print the badges, send alerts when VIPs arrive, somebody really important comes, you know, beep, beep, beep. It even notifies administrators about unattended guests. And all this is exactly how you want to handle a front desk. You can integrate any existing security systems like Wi-Fi access, ID checks, emergency notifications, so you get better security. And, of course, you'll have data on the visitors in your office, so you know who's coming, when they're on site, where they're going, who they're meeting, and why. Okta, which is a great example. This is a security company. They use it. They say it's so good it actually makes me excited to sign in. I love that. They have it at Box. Here's Volvo. Envoy gives our guests the right brand impression. Yeah, our logo's right on there. It works with everything you already use. It works with Slack. That's what we use. G Suite, we use that too. Box, Salesforce, Chatter. It's designed to help companies of all sizes and all types, even those in industries that are highly regulated, meet security and compliance requirements. It's the biggest companies in the world, Nike, Spotify, Pinterest, all work with Envoy. 30 million visitors. We haven't really added to that number significantly, but we use it too. Protect your people, your property, and the ideas the welcoming way with Envoy. 10,000 workplaces worldwide choose Envoy to make a great first impression. We've got a free trial waiting for you. Yeah, you can try it for free at envoy.com/twit. I got to tell you, it was very easy for us to set up. And I have to give this back now because Moses says I have to have my Envoy set up. But we have it right there at the front desk. If you come to Twit, you'll see it. You'll be able to use it. Envoy.com/twit to start your free trial today. By the way, there's also a delivery app that logs deliveries, says who they went to. You can see that which deliveries have come and have been picked up, which ones haven't. I'm happy to say all our deliveries have been picked up today. All right, you can take that back. Thank you, Moses. Envoy, envoy.com/twit. You've probably used it. I mean, you go to some of the big tech companies, they all use Envoy. It's really awesome. So Elizabeth Warren, Medium Post, says we should break up Facebook, Google, and Amazon.
She next, added Apple. Too.
Yeah, well, next day.
She followed up with Apple.
Well, next day was funny because I think, I don't know, I have to look at the video. I haven't seen the video. But when I was reading in The Verge, Nilay Patel, with the follow-up, it looked like he jumped her. Because initially her answers are one word, yes, no. But right away, he says, you mean Apple too? And she says, yes. And that's the headline. Either they run the platform or they play in the store. I have to say, in her defense, I do feel like this was something she hadn't really thought out and that Nilay got
That's
her.
A defense? That's well, a defense? She didn't think it out?
The Apple one is less thought out because basically she said, well, Apple shouldn't be allowed to run the store and sell their apps in the store. And honestly, if that's the problem, that's not it. There's a big problem. Spotify, in fact, is very upset with Apple and has just started a website and a campaign. And I think they might be planning to sue Apple as well. The website is timetoplayfair.com.
They have sued them in the EU.
They've sued them in the EU, which is the best place to sue them. And their complaint is, yeah, Apple, you know, has this store, but the real problem is Apple requires us to sell subscriptions through the store, and they get 30% complete rent-taking. Mm-hmm. At the same time, Apple prohibits us from showing customers how to upgrade any other way. And so what did Spotify do? Well, they had to raise the cost of a subscription 30% on iPhone. And then Apple comes back, starts its own music service 30% less. And in fact, to this day, you can still not ask Siri to launch Spotify on the iPhone. So...
Amazon Movies or Amazon Video Service also has this complaint.
This is pretty anti-competitive. In fact, Apple won't work with them on a watch app because Apple has a competing product. If Elizabeth Warren had said this, I'd say right on. I think you're absolutely right. This is absolutely anti-competitive behavior from a monopsony, not a monopoly, but the... I think it's a monopsony, right? It's the only place you can get apps for iOS devices is Apple's own store. So there are some merit to what she's asking for. Who should we start with? Stacey, we'll start with you.
Oh, no, don't start with me.
Okay.
This whole thing.
No, Stacey, please.
Let's start with Jeff. Would you elaborate? Ugh.
I think it was a cynical move to curry favor right now and not thought through. You know, for example, forbidding
house brands. Well, tell that to Sears Roebuck and Craftsman. Tell that to Walmart.
Any
tell
grocery that to every store in America.
And that it saves consumers money. And she might as well move to Europe because the view of antitrust there is different. There's no and Ben in Stratechery did a good Ben Thompson did a good job of this, saying that what's the law of aggregation, I think he calls it.
Yeah, that's the point thing is he invented.
That these things.
Yeah.
Right. These things are happening because they have consumer benefit, because they give us cheaper prices. It's an effort to say, oh, big tech is evil. What I'm going to be interested in is what a Kamala Harris does in return. And I have my Kamala hat outside because she represents California. So she's going to have to find a more nuanced view of this to say, well, here's where the tech companies are causing problems and here's where they're not. And here's what we got to talk about with regulation. I was in Ditchley near Oxford 2 weeks ago. And I was dreading it because it was a discussion of content moderation and freedom of expression, read regulation. And I thought it was going to be me screaming just like on this show defending the internet. And it turned into a very nuanced, very intelligent discussion. And where a lot of the room came into agreement was an FTC, Federal Trade Commission like regime, where companies are expected to make warranties to their customers, and if they fail at what that warranty is, then there's an enforcement mechanism against them for basically consumer fraud. So I'm not against regulation. I think that there are mechanisms and regimes of regulation that can work. But to jump all past that and just say they're bad because they're big and we're going to break them up is a cynical political move that hurts this country. It hurts technology. It hurts the friggin' future. And she's desperate. That's what I say.
Wow. I don't know if she's desperate. I do think it's opportunistic. I do think it is easy to joust at the tech companies. I do think that there are issues. The issue in the tech world is not that these are too big. It's that they do have anti-competitive practices. I also think that there is value in understanding how many of these companies have created machines that are these virtuous cycles that pull in more data, which gives them, creates a higher barrier to entry for people. That's kind of a more European view on it. I would say in the US, we asked, does that hurt consumers? And I would argue that it does, because consumers have very little choice that doesn't, you know, grab their data if they care about privacy, but we tend to look more at costs, and there we don't have a case. So if Elizabeth Warren and the Democratic Party want to change the way we look at antitrust, this could be a good talking point if it was a little bit more coherent. But as it stands now under our current regime, I'm a little skeptical.
But I'm all for the conversation about changing our antitrust. We're agreeing so much today, Stacey. This is going to drive Leo up the wall.
So yeah, we are. And I would say if it changes, like, I would differ a little bit with you, Jeff, in the sense that I'm okay with thinking about changing our antitrust regimes and how we talk about that, how we evaluate monopolies, or I can never say the word.
Monopsonies. You know, I only know the word because Amy Klobuchar keeps bringing it up. She said, I'm not worried about monopolies. I'm worried about monopsonies.
Yeah, I can't make those words.
I think that's a little show-offy.
But I do think there is a real question about the aggregation of data and the cycle that it creates for these companies to get bigger and better, and how much of a competitive barrier it pulls up. I would also say that the cool thing about technology is a totally different startup could actually come in, find some random data point or random device that people freaking love, and throw all that down. So that's the question. Can you become a Spotify today? Can you, if you're not Amazon or Google, build an Echo-like device? I don't know if that's possible.
Stacey, from the thing that I went to in the UK, what came out again and again and again, there was a guy from a Eastern European online service. And he kept on saying, you guys are trying to set this regulation. And I understand why, and that's fine. But you know what? The only people who can afford to do it are Google and Facebook and Amazon and Apple. And you're killing me. You're absolutely killing me. Articles 11 and 13, GDPR, a lot of these things, they just can't afford to do it. And so the irony here is that in the effort to reduce the power of the big platforms again and again and again, this regulation gives them more power and a competitive advantage over and a higher bar barrier to entry over those new upstarts.
I would respond, Jeff, but
conversation
I kind of,
stoppers.
My largest issue with this, I understand the outrage people have over these big companies. She seems to be focusing on size. In fact, I think at one point she even said if they get to a certain point, they should be broken up in size, which has nothing to do with antitrust law or anything else. Companies in the United States should be allowed to be successful as they want to be, as long as they don't, create any competitive environments, as long as there's competition, as long as there's challengers.
So you've got to go to the specific axe and the specific harm.
Yeah, and that's my fear.
Not
that
just say, oh, they're too big.
Something like this is like the pitchforks and the torches. Well, we just got to destroy these guys. That, of course, is not what anybody wants. It would be a horrible detriment to our society. And I'm afraid that this kind of conversation derails a very important conversation, one that's been ongoing here for the last few years, about, well, what should we get? How should we regulate these companies? I don't think anybody disagrees these companies need to be reined in, especially in privacy practices. And I'd really prefer to hear from Warren and all the other candidates specific plans in that regard. What are you going to do about our data? What are you going to do to protect our privacy?
So there is a fascinating experiment going on. I don't think it's widely known in France, where they're basically doing role playing, government and Facebook, of regulation. To understand the dynamics. And so they don't have any regulation to regulate against, but they're trying to understand what that works. And it was that discussion that led the group to a larger view of this FTC view. I said at one point, we have to talk about the terms of service, and it's Chatham House rules, so I'd be careful here, but a lawyer from a technology world said, well, we don't write terms of service against us. We write them against the users. And I said, right, but now you're going to be expected to write terms of service that give the users some warranty of what you're promising to do. That's the level of the discussion I want to see is, okay, talk about your responsibility. Talk about what you guarantee. Say what you don't guarantee. Let us argue about that. Make that public, and then we're going to hold your feet to the fire for that. I'm all for that. And then that allows Facebook to have one term of service and Reddit to have another one and 4chan to have another one and Apple to have another one. As well, they should. There are different companies with different relationships with their publics, and you, Leo, can choose to reject them all. But then you know what you're rejecting better.
Yeah. Mike Masnick writes, I think, in a very level-headed way. Again, none of this is to say we shouldn't be concerned about big internet companies with too much power. It's a perfectly reasonable concern, but just because you want to do something, and this is something, doesn't mean that it's the something we should do. The way to attack the positions of these big internet companies is to enable more competition, and you do that by encouraging alternatives in the marketplace. He's concerned about platforms, this idea of creating platforms out of them and forcing them to divest. He also points out that, this is really Congress's job, not the president's job, and Congress is never going to agree to do something this dramatic. I mean, there's all sorts of problems with it. So, even in the logic of it, he points out that she starts with this paragraph. 25 years ago, Facebook, Google, and Amazon didn't exist. Now they're among the most valuable and well-known companies in the world. It's a great story, but also one that highlights why the government must break up monopolies and promote competitive markets. He says, I find this very odd. I don't know how the first sentence supports the second. Yeah. In fact, the first sentence would seem to contradict the second. If these three companies sprang up in the last 25 years, that's good. That means another one could do the same thing.
Right.
Right.
So Yeah, I mean, clearly it's a bad idea. It probably is grandstanding. I mean, after all, it's a presidential election.
There we go. That's what I was going to say.
This is the time when we expect stuff like this.
And it's also not the time or place. Well, it may be the place, but it's not what we get. We don't get nuanced conversations from people who are going into primaries.
No.
Just end of day.
Well, we want sound bites. In fact, this is probably more complex and less of a soundbite than really is proper. I mean, this is an incredibly complex idea. What is the soundbite? Break up the big tech companies, man. Maybe that's okay. Maybe that.
So I just downloaded this. I'm ready yet. So there's an FT interview with Tim Berners-Lee today or yesterday
on the 30th anniversary of his proposal of the World Wide Web.
So it mentions in their report from the Center for International Governance Innovation by Kieran O'Hara and Wendy Hall, Four Internets, the Geopolitics of Digital Governance, right? There's the libertarian technology-based internet. There's the commercial-based internet of the big companies. There's the European regulatory internet, and there's the Chinese and Russian authoritarian internet. And what we're seeing here is these forces pulling and pushing each other to determine who's going to regulate and what's going to govern the internet, and we're not there yet.
Well, we're not going to be there. It is an unfortunate trend towards four separate internets, and I fear that's where we're moving. Yeah.
How long did it take for regulation in the railroads? Heck, airlines, telecom,
the best analog for this is breaking up AT&T, right?
Is it? Okay.
I think so.
No, because AT&T was given a monopoly.
Yeah.
It was given one by government.
Right.
You were the only phone company. You had to rent your phone from the phone company, blah, 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 blah. That's not where we are now. So no, I don't think it's a good analog at all.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not a good analog also in the sense that none of these companies are a monopoly in the way AT&T was a monopoly.
Which is also a government-sanctioned monopoly.
Right. But ignoring the genesis of the monopoly.
That's pretty major. Well,
maybe, but ignoring the genesis of the monopoly for a moment.
These aren't monopolies in that way at all.
For a tiny bit.
What was the
purpose of the breakup of AT&T, and what was the outcome of the breakup? Did it in fact achieve
still
the purpose?
Debated?
Yeah, we didn't achieve anything we wanted.
Why I bring that up. I'm using it as an example of why government intervention at this level may not be the best solution. Because it's a very big gun that's hard to control.
That I forget who made the argument, but I saw it a couple days ago that said that if you What could happen, unintended consequences, is that fine. So Zappos and Amazon are broken up again, but they're going to cooperate, and they both will probably do better. And that this could end up, the shareholders of these multiple companies then, now more multiples, could do fine, and it doesn't guarantee. What's the outcome you want? Are you doing what Stacey said? Are you getting new entrants in the market or not? Are you protecting
things? No, and in fact, if you look at what AT&T, here's the flow chart that's really clear. With AT&T and the breakup, you start at the top with AT&T, Bell South, AT&T, Ameritech, Pacific Telesis, Southwestern Bell, whoop, back into AT&T, whoop, now they're AT&T. Then Bell Atlantic with 9X, GTE, and became Verizon. And then US West with Quest and CenturyLink became CenturyLink. You went from 1 to 3, and I don't think you in any way fostered innovation or anything else. You certainly didn't create.
And by the way, if you want to break up some companies that are hated in this country, try Verizon.
Yeah,
try
there you
Comcast.
Go. Yeah, there you go. And in fact, that's what Mike Masnick, I think Ben Thompson, one of them says, is, hey, she didn't even talk about Comcast Universe, NBC Universal. And and actually she said, yeah, I'd include those two. I just, I only had so much space.
It's a moving target. Well, it's also that you're gonna reverse decisions that were made by government that did, for good or bad reason, approve these mergers. And then you're going to turn around and say, oh, never mind. So how can you rely on a government decision at any point?
I think honestly, we can all look at it and say it's a non-starter. It's not something that ever could happen.
But I don't think that's true. I think we could create genuine policy shift in the U.S. We would it would take longer than the adherents on one side want, but I think you can do that, and we have historically done that. Look at what we're doing, in terms of let's call it basic human rights. Let's talk about voting rights. Yes, that is taking an abnormally long time, but we are fixing it.
Yeah.
And so if you look at it, not from a 5-year time horizon, but you look at it and look how, I mean, a good example is net neutrality. Oh my God, we are still debating that 20 years after, they're actually 30 years after that is something, but we have shifted our policies. I would say they abruptly took a, they went abruptly backwards with the current administration, but I think we could do that. We can't just shrug our shoulders and say this is impossible.
No, we should do something about it. I just don't know if breaking them up makes any sense at all.
Well, having the conversation is started. It is doing something.
It's a good starter. And there is a tenor in Washington right now of doing something, for sure. For sure. Now, ironically, Facebook made it worse because when Elizabeth Warren bought ads on Facebook saying, let's break up Facebook, they took them down.
They used the Facebook logo. The automated algorithm challenged it and took it down because that violates the rule. They challenged. They got back up.
So you think it was just that?
Yeah, it's just this. It
was
just
tiresome. It was just a robot.
Okay.
It wasn't malicious, Leo.
For God's sakes.
But can I just say, who are the amateurs running this sort of thing at Facebook? Good Lord.
The optics were not good.
The optics were bad, but the media idiocy is worse. Yeah, it's a OF. How did that happen? But it was obvious. It was, and Facebook said it. It was they don't allow the use of the Facebook logo in ads. They don't want Facebook to seem to be endorsing anything.
That's actually a good point.
A comment on Facebook, which they did allow the Facebook logo to be used in it. They should. But I'll tell you, try to do an ad against Fox News on Fox News. See how far you get.
Yeah,
ain't gonna happen.
By the way,
against CNN on CNN, ain't gonna happen.
To underscore your point of some episodes ago, all the ads cost under $100. Yeah. At least candidates are getting smart about how to buy ad time on Facebook these days. Okay. Anything else you want to say before we move on?
Move on, please.
Oh, wait. I wanted to ask because I didn't get... Jeff, do you have any books on historical monopolies in the U.S. and regulation of them that you would recommend?
That's a good subject.
But one that I love, and I forget the title of it, is I think it's called The Great Atlantic and Pacific Tea Company. It was a history of the first chain store, which was A&P.
Okay.
And it's a wonderful, wonderful book because what happens is that the political pressure that goes on that tried to outlaw chain stores, because mom and pop stores were getting killed. There was political value to the mom and pops. And so they tried hard. It's like Elizabeth Warren trying to say, house brands, bad, right? Chain stores, bad. So if you own more than one store, this suddenly became awful. And you see the complete arc from the beginning of that, you know, the end of the mom and pop, which people can't stand, all the way over to, we're going the wrong way here, arc. All the way over to A&P dying. And it didn't quite go up to that. So I recommend it highly. I'll try to look up the title. If anybody in the chat room knows it, let me know.
Let's take a break.
You,
actually, before we take a break, Google says it will unveil the future of gaming on Tuesday. Google says it will unveil the future of gaming on Tuesday. We will be covering that live. We have now learned that they're going to be streaming this keynote from GDC. So is it 10 a.m., Karsten, on Tuesday?
It is 10 a.m. on
10 a.m.
Tuesday.
Pacific. That's 1 p.m. Eastern, 1700 UTC, twit.tv/live. It'll be Jason Howell and I commenting, as we always do, on these keynotes. It's expected that Google, which showed off kind of a cool project stream not so long ago, I missed it. I couldn't sign up in time, that allowed you to play a very nice, beautiful game called Age of Empires Odyssey on your Chromebook in Chrome by doing all the hard work on servers and streaming the imagery to the Chromebook. It looks like this is probably what Google's going to announce, Project Stream's public unveiling. There are some rumors that it might also announce some hardware. If it did, it would probably be kind of Chromecast-y hardware that would allow you to, say, play the game on an iPhone, cast it to a big screen TV. Not iPhone, an Android phone. Because I think that's the whole point of Project Stream, is to show how you can play AAA games on inexpensive hardware, maybe even Chromebooks and that kind of thing. But there is this weird rumor that they might do a high-end console. We'll see.
Wait, this is after they fired all the other people?
Well, the timing of that rumor is very bad because yesterday Google asked a lot of people working in their hardware division under Rick Osterloh to find other jobs. Yeah, that's another story. The implication is that perhaps Google wants to get out of the hardware business. These are people working on the Slate. The Slate tablet and the laptop, the Chromebook Pixel. They didn't release a new Pixel book this year. They did the Slate instead. It doesn't mention the Pixel phones though. So I don't know.
But so did you already know the name Jade Raymond?
Yeah, I saw that in this article. I did not. He's a former Ubisoft producer and Motive Studios founder, she's joined Google as a vice president. So given that she is a former head of a gaming company.
Yeah, so it's interesting.
Yeah. Join Google as a VP. So
I don't know what a VP at Google it means, really.
Yeah. She's an industry veteran.
They hired a major, evidently well-respected major gaming executive.
I recognize that. I'm just wondering, if you're a VP at Google, what are you in charge of?
Variety has an article that says she started as a programmer for Sony, went on to work for Electronic Arts, was a correspondent for the Electric Playground, worked at Ubisoft Montreal, where she was producer of Assassin's Creed, executive producer of Assassin's Creed 2, Watch Dogs, and Splinter Cell Blacklist. She helped open the Toronto studio for Ubisoft and served as its managing director. It's interesting. Yeah. Pretty high profile. So I imagine we'll see Raymond at the keynote on Tuesday. I don't know. I think this is very interesting. Why is gaming something Google wants to get into? What's your theory on that?
I have no theories on this. I mean, maybe they have a lot of extra server power and they really want to emphasize that. I don't know. I'm so not interested.
It is one thing you can't do well on a Chromebook.
Well, there's
but it is a very important part of the mobile ecosystem.
But you don't have mobile. Everything is mobile.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at either Facebook or Google, they don't give a darn about.
You know, I have to think about what we were saying when Microsoft did its HoloLens 2 announcement a couple of weeks ago, is that it really didn't look like Microsoft was that interested in the actual product. It was more a demo of Azure, of its services. And it maybe that's the same thing for a gaming play for Google is, yeah, this is a product, consumer-facing product, but really what it shows off is Google's
network. Our amazing cloud low latency network.
Yeah. And that's kind of what Microsoft did with HoloLens, right? It's all about all the amazing things you could do with Azure.
I think, yes and no. I think HoloLens actually has a viable market in the industrial space, and Microsoft really wants to sell Azure and provide the industrial internet that's coming because it will be a huge market in 20 years. It wants to get in on the ground floor there.
Makes a lot of sense. And gamers are not, in fact, the customers for Google's cloud services. On the other hand, if you could put together a very... See, the funny thing is Microsoft's doing this. They have a project, won't be out for a while, that's similar to a streaming gaming service. PlayStation already has such a thing. These things have been around. In fact, there have been companies that have failed doing this.
It's an excellent test of your computer infrastructure.
Yeah.
So if you think about, this is purely speculative, but if I think about the challenges required in bringing gaming to the edge, there's a couple things that work. One, it's an advertisement for your existing platform. Two, you're going to have to understand changes in networking like 5G. Three, you're going to be pushed into things like AR and VR that we don't know where that's going. Gamers are often on the front end of like services and content, right? Not all of them will expand beyond gaming.
Right.
You know, and so understanding that market in a lot of ways with Amazon Web Services, for example, the ability it had to understand what people were building on its platform and the things they needed, and then being able to release services on top of that that met those needs based on the data they had is what made AWS such a behemoth. If Google can provide the type of, and gaming is such a high demand edge service, if Google can understand that workload and build products that make that awesome, they might have an advantage as more computing goes out to the edge and becomes higher, like demands more, you know, capacity, lower latency, et cetera. That's just a speculation.
Yeah, I mean, all we can do at this point is speculate. There is money in gaming. Google, it's so hard to understand what Google's overarching strategy is in any of this stuff. As we learned, Google Plus happened mostly because Vic Gundotra championed it so long and hard that everybody just got tired of hearing from him and said, all right, go ahead, do Google Plus. And the minute he left, it died. So maybe this is that. Maybe there's just some guy in Google.
Is this a YouTube hedge? Is it?
Maybe.
What's the name? I always forget the name of the service.
Twitch.
Twitch,
thank you.
Amazon owns it, but I'm pretty sure Google tried to get it.
Yeah, exactly. So, it's another thing people do and spend time on. And
there's a lot of money in it.
There's money in it. There's this whole notion of spectator electronic sports.
We're going to
talk later about Amazon and the Yes Network, I would imagine. Or we can do it now.
Yes, we can do it right now. Amazon has put a bid in to buy the Yankees television network. This is something
along with the Yankees and others.
Yeah, the majority owner. But this is something that Alex Lindsay predicted a couple of weeks ago on MacBreak Weekly. He said, watch, in the next few years, most of the big sports franchises are up for renegotiation. And he says the network television is going to lose it because they're going to get the big players, Netflix, Amazon. I don't know if Twitter's big enough to play in that field or not, but these big players from tech are going to swoop in and offer money that the television networks just can't compete with. And
which is another reason Rupert Murdoch will yell about the tech companies, because he has a lot of these.
Yeah. And yeah. NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, they're all going to move online.
Good, because right now, cable and television, you can't get it. And then there's all these stupid no rebroadcasting rules.
Yep,
anyway.
Yep.
Wait, Leo, you were going to do an ad a while back.
Yes. Do you want me to do that now?
No, I was like, I don't know what your sense of timing is, but I know that
right before you do, Stacey, the book title is The Great A&P and the Struggle for Small Business in America by Mark Levinson.
Mark Levinson. I love it.
Oh,
thank
he's
you.
Good. I like Mark Levinson.
It's an excellent book. It's just really fascinating. And the parallels to our time now about fear of big giant companies. Is quite wonderful.
I kind of get nostalgic when you say A&P. That's where we shopped when I was a kid at the A&P.
May it rest in peace.
It's gone, huh?
It's gone. It's dead. Was the largest company in the world.
Was it? Really?
The largest retailer. I'm sorry, retailer in the world.
That's kind of amazing.
16,000 stores.
Wow.
Its explosive growth made a mortal threat to mom-and-pop grocery stores across the nation. Main Street fought back, leading the Hoover, Roosevelt, and Truman administrations to investigate the Great A&P. Because Senator Warren, I mean President Hoover, said it's just too big. The governor pressed criminal charges against the company for selling food too cheaply and won.
That's pro-consumer.
Well, that does sound like a lot of parallels.
Doesn't it? It's really, and it's a well-told tale here. It's really quite a good book.
Right. If you haven't backed up your Allo chats.
All of mine say test. Did you get this?
I have one chat on Allo, and it's with Jeff Jarvis the day Allo launched.
Here, right?
Yep. And that's it. No, I think it was at an airport. They're turning off the servers, so... you might as well just delete it from your phone. And if you haven't backed up your chats, as if you have anything, I don't know, on there. I am so baffled by what Google's doing. I don't understand. And meanwhile, Microsoft is now beta testing a feature on Microsoft Windows that lets you put your Android app on your computer screen.
I have that through Chrome in the messaging thing.
Yeah, it's okay. Like that. So
great.
Windows is going to let you do messaging from your Android, I guess, and other apps, any other app you want.
Is Skype ever going to come back to my Chrome?
Yeah, that was another thing. Microsoft pulled the plug on Linux and Chrome, yeah, right?
I was using, well, not Linux, also Chrome, and I was using it fine, and then suddenly, boom, gone. Antitrust, go after them.
Oh, man. All right, let's take a break.
I had a question related to this.
Yes.
Before we go on break, I'm very curious of other people. I am having a hard time on my Google Messages getting messages from people with iPhones. So I get the texts out of order, and now I'm not getting photos.
My
and
wife
other
has
things.
Had this problem.
Okay,
lately.
I was just curious if other people had this, because it feels really aggravating.
Only her. Only some of her messages don't come through.
What carrier is she on?
She's AT&T. On AT&T, and I'm on AT&T.
Oh. The sending carrier is relevant. There have been a number of issues, Sprint, and then I think yesterday I read about, was it Verizon was having trouble? You know, these are all handled through gateways, right? And their gateways mm-hmm. were not sending messages in order, or messages were being dropped. That's usually carrier specific to the sending carrier, is my
thank you, Leo.
My guess, my experience has been. It was good. I was reading an article on Headline News the other day about a guy who was redoing all of his servers. He runs a bunch of servers, and I was really pleased. At first I thought he was running them out of his house, and then I read no, he's running them off DigitalOcean, because DigitalOcean is so affordable. He had a Australian based this is an ad, by the way. Yeah, thank you. You can sorry, I segued into that so
smooth,
innocuously. I probably didn't make it clear. Our sponsor today is DigitalOcean. But I was just really impressed that he was running like a bunch of different stuff, public servers on DigitalOcean. That's how good it is. DigitalOcean is a place for you to create your cloud application affordably, quickly, easily. Whether you're running one virtual machine or 10,000, DigitalOcean has you covered with the flexibility to customize standard or even CPU-optimized droplets. You can. This is the thing I love about DigitalOcean. Sometimes I think people don't understand exactly what I'm talking about. But the idea is, in fact, if I go to my DigitalOcean account, I'll show you how easy it is to create a server. They call them droplets, like droplets in the ocean, right? So I'm going to create a droplet right now. Now, I use this because I am a hobbyist programmer, so I always like to have servers running so I can learn how to code in Node.js and things like that. So you can start here with distributions. Ubuntu, FreeBSD, Fedora, Debian, CentOS. There also is complete full support for containers like Docker and Kubernetes. There's a marketplace as well of one, what they call one button installs. These are all apps. Let's say, I don't know, what should I start? Okay, let's say I want to learn how to do Node.js. That's actually something a lot of people want to do. And I could create a LAMP stack very easily, or a complete Node.js installation running on Ubuntu 18.04. I'm going to choose a plan. And, you know, for when I first start up, I like to get the cheapest server. That gives me a gigabyte of RAM, a CPU, 25 gigs of fast enterprise-grade SSD storage, a terabyte a month of transfer. So I'm going to set that in. I like to enable the backups. That's $1 a month. If I like to have it be backed up automatically. You don't have to. You can add block storage if you're going to need more storage. I always start small because you can always add more later. Choose your server. Look at them. New York, San Francisco, Amsterdam, Singapore, London, Frankfurt, Toronto, Bangalore. Choose a server you want. You could turn on additional features like private networking, IPv6, user data monitoring. I always turn on my SSH key, so it makes it easy for me to log in. Let's name this Leo's Node. And now, basically, in the old days, you would call up a server company and say, I'd like to set up an Ubuntu server with a Node on it, or maybe they wouldn't even install that. You'd have to do it all for yourself. And they'd get back to you in a few days, say, yeah, it's provisioned. Watch this. In less than a minute, I am going to set up, provision, and have a Node server running that I can start programming on. That's how fast and easy it is. Notice my bill up here for my Django instance that I've been running last month, $2.41. You can use Kubernetes if you want to improve availability, scalability, and resource efficiency using containers. The one-click apps, like I just did, are amazing. Django, Docker, GitLab, LAMP, MySQL, Node.js, Ruby on Rails, on and on and on. They just introduced managed databases for Postgres, which is awesome. You can launch your database with a push of a button. DO handles the maintenance and the updates. Free daily backups with point-in-time recovery, standby nodes with automatic failover, end-to-end security. And the tutorials on here are fantastic. Oh, by the way, did you see? My node server is up and running. In fact, just to prove it, it's got a public IP address. Should I just log in? I can access the console and log in. I can SSH in right now to my server. It's booting up, and it'll be ready to run. This is awesome. For somebody who has an idea for an app, for instance, and wants to quickly build a minimum viable product, somebody who wants to learn, as I do, how to use these technologies, this is fantastic. I am just so excited about DigitalOcean. And boy, the pricing is right. You can know what you'll pay monthly with a simple flat pricing structure. Access the compute resources you need at the lowest rates, saving up to 55% compared to other cloud providers. And oh, by the way, 4.9's uptime. You get an SLA for 99.99% uptime. They've got cloud firewalls, full DNS management. Those data centers are all over the world. There's one near you, free round-the-clock tech support. It is truly awesome. 150,000 businesses, including some of the world's fastest-growing startups, rely on DigitalOcean to remove infrastructure friction and deliver industry-leading price performance. It's a revolution, frankly. We've come so far since my buddy Kevin Rose set up Dig by buying a server and huffing it over to a colo where he had everything. Yeah, you want to set up Ghost? Yeah, boom, boom, you go. Just that. Push that button. 55 seconds later, it's up and running. Sign up today. You'll get a free $100 credit. Now we're talking at do.co/twit. It's DigitalOcean. do.co/twit for $100 credit. DigitalOcean, trusted by businesses, loved by developers. It really is. It's a revolution. It's hard to overstate how important this is to creating the next big thing. I just love it. DigitalOcean. We thank them for their support. Would you like to get a little change loggy on us here?
Yeah.
Play the trumpets.
Yeah.
The Google change log.
Change log.
We missed the trumpets.
I am waiting on my Pixel 3 to be invited because Android Q is in beta, public beta. You do have to, of course, as always in the past, sign up for the beta. So the way you do it is enroll by going to google.com/AndroidBeta. View your eligible devices. They tell me there are a lot of eligible devices this time. I've opted in for my Pixel 3 XL, and of course, all the Pixels will be optable. So I'm just waiting because now that I've pushed that button, let me just see. I'm gonna go to the updates and see if hey, maybe there's an update available, and I could go to Android. Oh, let's see. Check for update. Do you do this a lot? I do this a lot. I'm all the time. I'm sitting here pressing that button, preparing system update. Here comes the queue. So I don't know what's in here. I don't care because it's the new operating system, right? That's all we care about. Google is releasing Android beta feedback app for reporting issues and feature requests at the same time. So here it is. Update size, 1.3 gigabytes. Download and install. Should I do it? Oh, what the heck? What could possibly go wrong? I would actually, now that I'm doing that, I probably can't show you this, but it's pretty good news if you're using a Pixel phone. And I think this is going to eventually go to all Android devices, maybe even iOS. Do you ever use the Google Keyboard Gboard, which is
I got it this morning, and it's so fast and it's so awesome. Okay, that's
so all. Dictation is now on device. No more network delays, and it's supposed to be very fast. So tell me about it. You're playing with it.
Well, I use voice dictation all the time.
Me too.
And so, here.
Did you have to download something new or anything?
No, it's just an update to Gboard. But what phone are you on?
Okay, hold on. I'm on the Pixel 2. It is an update to Gboard, but it does ask if you want to download this. It's, I think, 85?
Oh, because you have to download some additional.
Yeah, you have to download the voice recognition modules. Right. And then you also have to allow Gboard access to your storage drive on your phone and your microphone although I thought I'd already had access. Anyway, those were the two things I noticed happening. But here, I'm going to send you Leo. Oh, Leo, I don't have your number or your phone. This is me sending dictation almost instantaneously.
And it's really quick. And it's apparently more accurate, right? It uses a built-in end-to-end recognizer on device for, it's only for American English on Pixel smartphones right now.
I'm going to lower my thing so you get the contrast. Wait, it's high contrast so y'all can see it?
On device force. I don't know.
This is me dictating lots of things really fast to you.
Oh, actually, you turn down the brightness is what you need to do, not the contrast.
Okay.
Because it's so bright, it's blowing out the camera.
Sorry, camera. Okay.
End-to-end, all neural, on device.
End-to-end, all neural, on device.
Go ahead, show it. Yeah. There you go. Keep talking.
I'm telling you everything I can think of right now, and it's doing a pretty good job. Oh, it used to take several minutes. Not several minutes. It used to take at least a minute.
It would have to round trip to the server. That is awesome. So, it's real time.
So just got a notification. How did that happen, Stacey? How did that happen?
I'm so special.
You are special.
I got a notification. It sent me, where did it send it to me? Oh, it is still listening. Hold on, stop. Where did it? I think I got a notification and it said, hey, would you like to speed up your voice recognition or something like that? And I said, would I? And then I read about it really quick and then poof.
If you're one of these nerds, and I bet you are, Stacey, that loves reading geeky, text about how this all works, go to the Google AI blog because there's a really good discussion of what the issues are and how they trained it and the kinds of training they did. And this is, really interesting, deep dive into it and how offline recognition is difficult and challenging.
This is awesome. Oh, yeah. Okay.
They're using, in case you want to know, parameter quantization and hybrid kernel techniques made publicly available through the Model Optimization Toolkit in the TensorFlow Lite library. Model quantization delivered 4x compression with respect to trained floating point models and a 4x speed up at runtime, enabling our RNNT to run faster than real-time speech in a single core.
80 megabytes. It's almost
down to 80 megabytes. Yeah.
It was actually, I think, 85.
Which is really tiny.
Tiny.
So this actually makes sense, y'all.
What does it type when you say y'all?
Y'all.
Or YAWL, which is what I'd type.
Oh, no, that's not how you pronounce it, y'all. Okay, hold on. Y'all need to spell this correctly. Yep. Y'all.
Damn, that's good. All that in 80 megabytes? Sheesh.
I remember my children way back when at the San Francisco Examiner, we had a CMS called Systems Integrators, Inc.
And oh, my we had God.
Did you guys call it SYNC for short?
No, we called it SII.
You should have called it SYNC.
And they had a smart terminal, because before that, all these things had been dumb terminals. And so they had a smart terminal, and I remember the founder of the company lauding the absolute rock star programmer who got hyphenation and justification onto the terminal. And this was a huge deal. And now you think that what you just did, Stacey, I'm having my old Uncle Jeff moment.
Yeah.
But it's just amazing.
Well, thanks to connectionist temporal classification, we've been able to have the latency of the production recognizer.
Basically, they used recurrent. So the RNNT is recurrent neural network transducers. And if you think about a recurrent neural network,
I have a few installed in my head. I know. Yeah, they're already in there. That's why I like tech companies, because they're already there and it doesn't hurt people.
It doesn't hurt anymore. Yeah.
All right.
So instead, do you really want to know this? I can break this down.
Break it down, Stace.
So an RNNT, a recurrent neural network transducer, instead of getting the whole input and then doing an output, it's doing it continuously. So that's the first part that's really cool, right? So instead of waiting for like a segment of text.
That's why it looks like it's typing. It looks like it's going a letter at a time. It's really amazing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And when they talk about things like parameter quantization and hybrid kernel techniques, just ignore that. They're shrinking it. They're that's how they're shrinking it.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is this can do it continuously all the time, but it took 450 megabytes to do that. And they were like, nope, we got to make it smaller. So they use those techniques to make it smaller. And then they use the TensorFlow Lite library to do that. And now it's super fast, continuous, and it's super small, so it fits on your phone. How is that?
Neat. As we continue with the Changelog, Lookout, which has been around for a while, has been kind of revamped. It's also AI to help people who are blind or have low vision identify their surroundings.
This is so great.
It even shows the edges with haptic feedback. By holding or wearing your device, we recommend hanging your Pixel phone from a lanyard around your neck or placing it in a shirt front pocket. Lookout tells you about people, text, objects, and much more as you move through a space. Once you've opened the Lookout app, all you have to do is keep your phone pointed forward. No more buttons to tap within the app. You just focus on what you're doing, and it'll say, "That's a dog." Screenshot image of Lookout's modes, including Explore, Shopping, Quick Read. Here it is detecting a dog in the frame. Really cool. Really cool.
So great.
If you're blind or you know somebody's blind, you might want to get them set up with a Pixel.
Yeah, break them up because they're all evil and they never do anything good for people.
Yeah.
Okay. Hold up there. That's like saying someone who abuses their family is a decent person because he once gave a homeless guy a cheeseburger.
No, it's not. What it's saying is that size can yield the benefits to do things like this, like AT&T Labs back in the day.
And incidentally, Google is not the monolithic monopoly that some of you thought it to be. For example, in Chrome 73, which is rolling out right now, you can change your search engine to DuckDuckGo.
Take that. I'll bet five people will do it.
Next, Google's going to give a cheeseburger to a homeless guy. There's other features in this.
Took me a minute.
Yeah. What's it? What? Chrome 73 is also updated for Mac, Windows, and Linux. This is the Android version. Some redesigning in the downloads experience in the manager, the Omnibar link shortcuts, and light pages. Anyway, there's a brand new Chrome in town.
So I talked to a Microsoft executive recently and was asking about the results of the European breakup regulation and all that from the past. To this day, Microsoft has to offer a Windows version with no browser. It's Windows N. And I said, how many do you sell? He said, maybe 100 or 200 a year. Yeah,
just what everybody's looking for.
Yeah.
Oh, Jeff, you turned back orange. Were you orange this whole time?
Oh, yeah.
No, I fix it every once in a while because the sun goes up here.
You're warm. Oh, yeah. It's the magic hour in brandy wine. Yeah.
I should be having a glass of wine in front of me right now, but I don't.
Yeah. Get a glass of wine. Don't stop on our glass.
I'll join you, Jeff. You just let me know.
It's too early for you, Stacey.
So Google.
Wait, it's 5:20.
The sun's over the yardarm somewhere, as my grandfather was wont to say.
That's what my father says every time. Yeah. Yes.
Sun's gone over the yard.
My father says it's toonie time.
Toonie for martoonies?
Martini.
Everybody should have a martini.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's my father from West Virginia. He says things like that.
I love it. That's folksy.
He is.
He's more fun than a one-armed paper hanger in a room full of rocking chairs.
That's what the kind of things Pop-Up will say. Yeah.
Chrome Stacey's extension confused. From Google helps you filter toxic comments, unfortunately not from this show, but from Reddit, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and Discuss. It's called Tune. It's a Tune extension, and it lets you control what comments. I have to say, I've been on a number of sites. What was I reading? An article. Maybe it was a Variety, when every single comment on the article was spam. I mean, it was like they had just given up.
Yeah, I've given up on the comments. I shouldn't say this out loud, but on Buzz Machine, there's not been anything there decent for a long
time. Just turn them off.
Every month or so I go in. Yeah, I should just turn them off. Every month or so I go in and I kill, like, it catches up pretty quickly. So it's maybe 10 spams are in there. And then
Well, this doesn't do spam, but it lets you control, I guess.
This is Jigsaw, which is the kind of quality media and and public discourse division of Google that does neat things with media companies.
And it's kind of an odd interface. You can set the volume on the comments you see. Keep it quiet. Keep it loud. Keep it blaring.
Turn it up to 11.
This is built on the machine learning models that power Perspective. I don't know what Perspective is. Perspective.
It's API. Something that's been offered to media companies and others to try to fix their comments. I think it's the right thing. This whole effort gives moderators tools so that it'll automatically kill things. The moderators can just check it, and the moderators have a sliding bar as to where they want to go on things and so on. It's pretty cool.
So this does the same thing, but only on your machine. On your Chrome.
Yeah, I had a conversation today with a former government regulator who was talking about she's in Baku about to moderate a panel. And what do you do about disinformation? I just said you will never get rid of it. We got to stop that notion of whack-a-mole with the world, with nasty things and wrong things. And we've got to change the fertile ground that in which they plant their seeds, but we're going to have bad stuff. And so having more tools like this out there that help you control your experience will mean there'll be less panic about it. And it's a fine thing.
So I'm not sure I want to demonstrate this because I'd have to go to, a bad website. And if it didn't work, it would be a bad thing. But I've installed it on my Chrome. I don't use Chrome anymore. Sign in with Google and click the Tune extension. Okay, so let's sign in with Google. Okay, click the Tune extension icon to get started. Okay. No personal data is stored. Well, that's a relief. Okay. So I guess I control for comments on YouTube. Should I go to Twitter? And I don't know what I'm going to.
Twitter already shields Twitter? You from stuff.
It works on Twitter. Should I go somewhere like a really bad? Should I go somewhere really bad on Reddit?
Yeah, Reddit's probably a good toxic place. Go to like the.
Okay, I'm gonna go to a good toxic place.
I'm just trying to think of a good Reddit place where you're gonna get some.
So the first thing you do, what do you want? Politics? What do you want to tune? So I'm gonna tune Reddit. Okay, or actually all of them: YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, Reddit, Discuss.
Just go to YouTube.
You can show this. You can show this, Carson. I'm not doing anything bad. And okay, so I've selected which sites. Done. Okay, now set the volume. I don't really understand what that means on the comments. Do you want it loud, medium? Oh, look. So look at the comments on the right. As I turn down the volume, it's starting to shrink. They're all. I turned it way down.
Silence.
So
Simon and Garfunkel, the Sounds of Silence.
I don't know what it's taken out. So here's a comment. Genius, says the redneck marketing team. If I turn it down, that disappears. Turn it up. Such comments as, "You can fit so many inbred cousins in this bad boy." Before I go on, you should probably see what they're talking about because it's not as bad as you think. It's a limousine, which is just a bunch of pickup trucks welded together. It's a weird way to stretch. So understand, I realize now in a vacuum, those comments might have seemed lewd, but they're in fact just talking about that. And then turning it up. Well, this does do something.
So words like redneck probably.
Yeah, probably like- redneck triggered it. Yeah.
See, that's the problem with these automated things. It can't possibly deal with nuance, even though nuance is an odd word to bring to that discussion.
Well, and even what is loud, medium, blaring? I mean, I guess
that means that tones down the commentary.
Tones down the comments. All right. It works. It definitely it does it. There you go. And by the way, this is a very fun subreddit that I've just discovered, DIY, spelled WHY. And it's just a bunch of stuff people have done that really they shouldn't have, like turning this piano into a desk. Here's a life hack. Instead of packaging your expensive lenses, just throwing them in a box and letting them rattle around. The life hack is fill it up with popcorn and then throw the lens in. But the best part of this is the comments like, well, I think you need more butter on that popcorn and things like that. So this is actually I don't know, Carsten, do you follow DIY? It's a high, Carsten and I seem to. Here's a good one. This is they're taking hot dogs and they're going to build what looks like a Lincoln log
cabin
structure out of hot dogs.
Yep.
Is basically, you've seen this before, Carsten.
Oh, of course.
You're familiar with this.
I'm familiar with
Lincoln Log. They do this at Harvard.
Oh, yes.
But the funniest thing is this whole subreddit mocks what has become a huge industry on YouTube, which is the how-to, you know, video. And now they're cooking the Lincoln.
You cook it.
Yes. Oh, you don't well. Anything until you've seen a Lincoln Log hot dog Buckingham Palace.
There is such a thing, huh?
If there's not, yeah. Someone should make it.
Yeah. This is a great, I really enjoy this. He made boxers out of towels. I don't, you know, it's just, wait a minute. Is it too cold to dive in? So here's what you do. You take a black trash bag, cut a fun noodle to hold it onto a hula hoop. Then instead of black absorbs sunlight and lets the pool heat, and then it's nice and warm.
Well, that's pretty cool. That is okay.
Some of these are quite long, and when you get to the end, you go.
Wait, go back to the cat. What's the cat doing?
Okay. How to make a briefcase bed for a cat. Everybody needs to know this. Is
he going to close the case on the cat?
No. None of these are mean. They're just like, why?
See, Stacey, you become too cynical now.
So he's got an old briefcase.
Dirty
so basically,
briefcase.
What's about to happen here is an 8-minute video where he basically just takes this briefcase apart and puts foam in it and makes it a cat bed. And at the end of it, you go, okay.
Why?
Why? Why? Why? Why? And why?
Well, because you've saved that briefcase from the landfill.
It's not the perfect cat bed, though.
Well, oh, look, he's
putting
a cat.
He's putting wheels on it. Oh, I'm seeing this is takes a stand. Maybe the cat really likes sitting in briefcases. Maybe that's it. Maybe this is a cat that has, as many cats do, a predilection for sitting in luggage. Now you can satisfy your cat's. This YouTube's full of crap like this, you know.
Yeah, it is. You know, you complain about the world falling apart. There's no harm in this.
Wait a minute. Now he's printing cat imagery to make the cat happy.
You've got to decorate it.
Yeah.
This is somebody who needs a job.
Well,
no, this is
he's
somebody.
He's got a job. He's a YouTuber.
He just likes doing. I mean, like, haven't you ever made like a silly, stupid project?
No. Anyway.
What? Really?
No.
I made a portable podcasting studio out of the IKEA box and some little things. I mean, you don't make
look
crazy
at that.
Stuff.
Kitty's
I make the things
love
that are inside
it.
The IKEA box and think I've made something.
Oh, this is so sweet. Wow, they're really, this guy's not stopping. Yeah. He's now bedazzling.
That's the sort of thing my daughter
would do. He's bedazzling it. Where's the cat? Wait, we got to wait. Unfortunately, now we have to see the whole thing because.
And the cat's not going to bother. The
we
cat's
have to
gonna
see
say,
if the cat actually goes in this thing. Oh, he's put a bell in because the cat likes to play with the bell. Oh, look at that. Aren't you glad you have that in your house? Oh, and the cat loves it. The cat loves it. Okay, I'm going to run home and make that. Anyway, turn the comments down on that. Maybe. I don't know. That's something you can do with Tune. Let's continue on the Google changelog.
I have in my Twitter feed today as the show began. Can you all talk about Google-related topics? This is getting a bit out of hand.
Hey, that's what we just did. I had a whole segment. This is all Google. Your mission, Gumshoe,
kind of.
Catch Carmen Sandiego in Google Earth. Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego? To celebrate the global explorer of all of us, Google is introducing the Crown Jewels Caper. This is the first in a series of Carmen Sandiego games in Google Earth. They did it with Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, which is where Carmen Sandiego. Let's try it. Shall we go? Search for Carmen Sandiego in Google Earth.
No, I want to find Waldo.
Didn't they have Waldo in Google Maps at one point? I feel like they did.
I think so.
Yeah. I think Google Earth has decided to download the entire Earth. So we'll just let that continue on and say that concludes Google Changes. Gosh, there's a lot of stuff I should mention. Patrick Delahanty, our engineer, who has a wonderful child named Caden. As often happens with the younger set, the babies make friends with other babies and the parents get together. And apparently one of Caden's friends has said his first word.
Everyone do the Matty Bat. Hey, Google, play the Batty song.
Oh, my God.
Oh.
Leo.
Oh.
Leo's first word was Google.
Google.
She should get Google should definitely send that baby something.
She got a major scholarship. Yeah.
When I first saw this story, I thought, well, every baby's first word is good. But I think she very clearly, when daddy said, hey, she said, Google. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. And Alexa's too hard for a baby to say.
Yeah.
So that is, yeah, you can't say it. Yeah. Shh. Twice I've activated my phone now. So that is a very important story, and I'm glad we got to that. Let's just before we wrap it up, is there anything I'm missing?
Yeah, excuse me, I've got to go. Paste some my kids' heads onto water polo players.
That is a wild story. Okay,
we are not talking about that.
That is a wild story. There's no Google angle. There's no tech angle, really, except that. The Department of Justice has actually indicted 50 parents for bribing administrators, coaches, and others to let their kids into college, including a couple of well-known actors. And then David Mamet, who's friends with Felicity Huffman and her husband, William H. Macy, writes a letter in support saying everybody does it.
Ooh.
No, I don't think so. He's saying, okay. Jared got into Harvard after it just was a coincidence that his father gave Harvard $1 million+, and then Jared gets into Harvard. But it's an endowment.
Who took Jared's SAT test for him?
Well, but yeah, so that's one thing, and that's happened for years. But I've read a number of people at admissions department saying, no, look, if somebody calls us up and says, I really want my son to go to Harvard, I went to Harvard, he's a legacy, and how much is it going to cost me? I'll endow the library, whatever. They say, no, we send it over to the development group, which, by the way, development is academic speak for fundraising. Mm-hmm. And so we send it over to development, and development knows the words to say, which is, well, we would love that gift, but of course we can't guarantee placement at Harvard only if your child is worthy, you know.
And you can show a picture of the water polo team your child's on.
Well, apparently the kids had nothing to do with it. These parents were so anxious to get their kids into big fancy schools that they were bribing. And that's what Felicity Huffman did. She paid $15,000 to this charity to make sure that a proctor would allow or fix any bad questions in the SAT exam, giving her a very high score. But that's neither here nor there.
No, it's an amazing story.
But we know Jeff, and we know he loves that kind of story.
It was relief not be in the political story for once.
I was never tempted to bribe anybody to get my kids into college.
God, no.
But you don't want them to go and have a bad experience if they're not ready for it.
Right.
You have to trust that the school is going to admit somebody. Now, admittedly, sometimes schools make mistakes. But
it says more about the parents. It says more about the pressure we're putting our children under.
A lot of pressure, yeah.
Yeah, sometimes life just makes mistakes and you have to roll with it.
It's the way it is. And what's the lesson you're teaching kids, honestly?
Well, lesson that they've learned already throughout their lives.
Yeah, that I'm privileged and white and I can get what I want.
Yeah, they probably already know that lesson. All right, let's take a break and do our picks of the week, and we can send you all home, and I can get on a big old jet airliner, 737 MAX, headed for Los Angeles. What could possibly go wrong? Our show today brought to you by WordPress. If you want to know what's going on with Leo in the world, You don't go to Facebook. You don't go to Instagram. You don't go to Twitter. You go to my blog because that's my home on the net. And I would submit that even if you are all over Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, even if you're a business, and of course you have to have pages on all those sites, you still should have that one site that's your website, your domain with your name, the place where your stuff links to, the place where your best stuff shows. If you're a restaurant, that's where your menu is, the reservation system. If you're a plumber, that's where you talk about your services, your fees, and maybe even you post an article or two on there about how to fix a toilet or a leaky faucet. It's a place where you can put yourself out there on the net. And I am still, maybe it's old-fashioned to me, but I'm still a firm believer that that's the best possible thing you can do. You want your name, your site to show up when people Google you. I tell teenagers this all the time. Get yourself a website. Start putting your best stuff up there. And the best place to do it, WordPress.com. It's easy. You don't have to be a geek. You don't have to be an HTML wizard. They've got everything you need. Powerful site building tools, thousands of themes, so you can make it look exactly like you want. And if you ever have a question, the support people at WordPress.com are actual WordPress experts. So they have answers at their fingertips, and they're there 24/7. WordPress.com lets anyone pursue whatever it is they love by launching a site that's free to start with room to grow. It was really created back in the day by Matt Mullenweg and his team so that anyone could publish their ideas. It was all about tearing down the gatekeepers. There's no two-week trials. There's no hidden fees. And you own your content forever. You can upload pictures, video, audio, text, and download it too because it's never stuck there. It's built to grow with you wherever you want to be. And I love WordPress.com because I don't have to worry about maintaining it, running it, updating it. They do it all for you. All you have to think about is the content. Some of the biggest companies in the world use WordPress. Stacey told us Fortune.com uses WordPress. I know Quartz uses WordPress. WordPress is amazing. In fact, WordPress is so good. 33% of the internet runs on WordPress. Here we are celebrating the 30th anniversary of the World Wide Web. Well, you got to mention Matt Mullenweg and WordPress because one-third of the web runs on WordPress. Go to WordPress.com/twig and create your new site. It's so much fun. You're going to love it. It's for a special event, a project, or your lifetime achievements. I'm at leolaporte.com. What's your WordPress site? Go to wordpress.com/twig. And by the way, if you go there, you'll get 15% off any new plan purchase. 15% off at wordpress.com/twig. How about a pick of the week from Stacey Higginbotham?
Yes. I actually was going to do the Google download, but since we talked about it in the changelog, I switched it to the latest book that I'm reading, which is awesome. It is called Billion Dollar Whale, The Man Who Fooled Wall Street, Hollywood, and the World. This is about the 1MDB scandal. This is the Malaysian banking scandal where this con man basically went in and stole the $1.2 billion. Oh, no, they're saying over $5 billion.
Wow.
This bank in Malaysia. And then it was covered up by the prime minister and various officials at Malaysian and state agencies. The book involves the scandal. It involves how the con man who did this had parties with like famous people like Britney Spears. It is well written.
Oh,
it
sounds good.
True. And it is awesome.
Very good. Say the name again.
I really recommend it. What'd you say? It's Billion Dollar Whale, The Man Who Fooled Wall Street, Hollywood, and the World. And it was written by two Wall Street Journal reporters.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's really good. Hey. I think it should be a movie. Maybe it is already a movie. I don't know.
That sounds like it'd be a good movie, doesn't it? And no whales were harmed in the writing of this book.
No whales. He was a whale in casino terms only.
Only. Do you have a number, Jeff?
I have a few. One is that yesterday Howard Stern announced his new book, Howard Stern Comes Again.
Oh, Lord.
And it was already immediately number one bestseller on Amazon.
Oh, my goodness.
I called into the show today. It was amazing. And if you went yesterday and searched for Howard Stern on Amazon, you couldn't find it. It was hard to find. Nonetheless, It still went up there immediately. And he's going to be writing about his transition to being a great interviewer. And I can't wait.
It's his first book in 20 years.
Quite a while. And it's the first one he's promoted without a terrestrial radio station.
But it just shows you his satellite voice is still pretty darn large.
Phenomenal. Phenomenal.
So here's, it wasn't a mistake for him to go to satellite.
No, it was not. Not at all.
Certainly not to his private fortune.
So I looked up, I couldn't figure out where I had bought the AMP book, but these are numbers that I think we'll find interesting. Again, this is from the great AMP of in 1926.
Oh, it's on hold already, at least in my library.
Oh, good. So I just have a couple numbers here, which are fascinating. In 1926, Kansas City had 30 food markets per square mile, right? Which is phenomenal. There was one food market for every 51 American families. That's how inefficient we were. In the average working class family in the 1920s devoted one-third of its budget to groceries. The average farm family even more. Most households spent more to put dinner on the table than rent or their mortgage. And for the average, pardon me for this, housewife, shopping for food consumed a large part of the day. So A&P came in and changed that and made food cheaper and more accessible, and they got in big trouble for it.
Mm.
Sounds familiar.
Mm. Yeah, what was the harm after all?
Yep.
Well, all those mom-and-pop groceries that had to find new...
True that.
I mean, there is an actual harm. I'm not saying it's, you know, legitimate to stop that down. I'm just like, but that is an actual harm.
Yeah. All right. Okay. I'll give it to you. I'm gonna recommend, even though Audible no longer advertises on our network. I don't care. I love them still, and I just listened to this Audible original. I just liked it so much. One of the things Audible started doing is these originals, and they actually commissioned a play. It was a live reading recorded from Billy Crystal at the Minetta Lane Theater in Greenwich Village. And as far as I know, the only way you could hear it is on Audible. I listened to it. It's amazing. Kevin Klein stars as the president of the United States, who's having actually a terrible day. Annette Bening is his wife, the first lady. Billy Crystal is, I don't want to tell you. You'll find out. He's funny in it. It's very funny, but it's actually very poignant. And I didn't know Billy Crystal was a good writer, but it's an incredibly well-written little play, and it's an hour and 46 minutes, so it's easy to listen to. I quite enjoyed it. Have a nice day. This is not the first time Audible's done a play on their originals, and I think it's kind of, it shows you the radio theater really could have made it if you had great writers and great actors. Because a lot of times when you hear radio, old-time radio, the acting is so broad and the writing is so terrible, you think, well, this is not a good medium for theater. But then you hear something like this or Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and you realize, actually, audio is an amazing medium for theater.
Oh, yeah. I mean, have you heard like the BBC, every year BBC does a Neil Gaiman book?
Yeah, amazing.
I mean, those are awesome.
I want to hear more of this. And I know that some podcasters kind of venturing into it, like Homecoming from Gimlet. But wow, is this one good? Billy Crystal co-wrote it with Quentin Peoples. And it's really good. There's sound effects in it. It's done live, which is amazing. And these actors are so good. They're really great actors. It's just fantastic. So if you have an Audible credit lying around or you're an Audible subscriber and you get the originals, it's a free original this month. I think it's still free this month. Have a nice day with Billy Crystal. And that, my friends, concludes this nice day with Stacey Higginbotham. I didn't even get to give you a credit. Let me give you your plug. She has a fabulous podcast, Stacey, the IoT podcast with Stacey and Kevin Toefel. She's on the web at stacyoniot.com. And if you get the newsletter, you will be very glad to have that in your inbox. And anything else you want to talk about that you're doing?
No.
Except going to have a nice meal.
I was going to say, it's getting to stay. I'm actually not hungry yet.
Dinner time. Really? You're not hungry?
I'm not hungry yet. It's amazing.
Wow. We finished in a nick of time.
Ta-da.
Jeff Jarvis, he is our favorite professor at CUNY in New York City. He joins us every week. BuzzMachine.com is his blog. He also posts on Medium, and you should read his books and see him right here. You're going to be traveling next week, I think, yeah?
I've got some, I'll email Karsten. I've got for the next couple of weeks, I'm a bad boy, just not knowing, but I'm going to be at a Facebook event next week, a Google event the week after that, and Italy the week after that.
Wow.
Well aware.
So we'll is it Perugia?
It's Perugia.
Oh, I'm jealous. I would love to go.
Are you going to say hi to Matthew Ingram?
Yep. Matthew will be there. Yep. We'll be supping on cacio e pepe.
Oh, man. I don't know what that is, but it sounds good.
Oh, it's adult macaroni and cheese. It's pasta. Wonderful parmesan.
Pasta and pepper and cheese.
And pepper.
Oh.
That's it. That's all. It's a little soupçon butter, but that's it.
Well, I should mention, I think Matt Cutts is going to be on Twit on Sunday. Is that right?
Oh, yay.
That is correct.
In fact, it's an all-in-studio Twit with Matt Cutts, Ian Thompson, and somebody else. Really good. It's a good panel, all in studio. If you've ever thought maybe you should come up to Petaluma and watch the show, this would be a good Sunday to do
Sam
it.
Sam Abu El Samid.
Oh, yeah. Sam's going to be bringing the Kia Niro electric vehicle to review and test drive, so we'll have that as well. So it should be a fun Twit. We'll be talking about Tesla on Sunday. But Matt Cutts, our old friend, is also in studio, and I forgot to mention it the last time he was here, so I thought I'd give you a heads up. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We do This Week in Google Wednesdays around about 1:30 Pacific. That's 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC, now that we're on daylight saving time. You can watch live or listen live at twit.tv/live, chat in the chat room at irc.twit.tv, or get any version of any show downloaded right to your device from our website. This Week in Google is at twit.tv/twig. Or subscribe to This Week in Google in your favorite podcast application, or ask Echo or Google or somebody to play it for you. Thanks, everybody, for being here. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google.